What you're about to listen to was originally broadcast on 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia. For details, go to the website 98five.com.
98.5, you are with Lockie, and it is an absolute pleasure to have in the studio the Reverend Hollis Wilson, who was the recently appointed, inducted man at Wesley in the City. Good morning, Reverend. How are you going?
Good morning, Lockie. Lovely to see you.
It is a pleasure to have you in the studio, finally. And, I mean, you've been in Perth since 1994.
That's right.
And you've never been to the studio.
I'm a north of the river guy.
Ah, okay. Well, that's not an excuse, but we're going to get you back plenty of times from now. And particularly because you have an amazing story, one that I think people were just going to be wowed by. To say that rocket science is involved is kind of part of the equation. So recently you've come from Florida. You're at the Floriate Uniting Church for many years, 20 plus years. And you've just been appointed the minister at Wesley in the City, which is just an amazing building, so much history and heritage there. So a great opportunity as far as connecting with community and doing amazing things. But you came to Perth in 94. Yep. Tell us a bit about how you came to Perth, first of all.
Yeah. Well, first of all, my wife is a West Australian.
Well, there you go.
So when she said it's time to go home, I went, well, I guess I better come too.
Yeah.
So that was it, 1994.
And where did you meet?
At the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, California.
Okay, so what year was that?
That was 91.
1991. And so how long did you know her for before you started dating, before you got married, all those kinds of things?
We knew each other probably for a whopping month because she came out to do the summer program at the seminary. She went home. She was the head of religious studies at Santa Maria College.
Yeah.
Long distance phone calls were really expensive.
Oh, weren't they? Goodness.
Yeah. So that was real commitment.
Yeah. So how did it grow from there? I mean, you've known each other a month. How did you end up married and 30 years down the track?
Yeah, a lot of back and forth, a lot of phone calls. I came here for the engagement party.
Okay.
It was in her parents' backyard. They put up a big marquee. And
she
her,
just knew. You just knew she was the one.
That was it. That was it. But her uncle looked at me, Carmelo, he looked at me and he says, you know, if you don't do right by her, and he did that slashed throat symbol.
Goodness. So needless to say, you've done the right thing all these years.
Yes. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So as far as your vocation is concerned, you left school, you studied in theological college.
Yep.
You also did engineering, is that right?
That's right. Started out as an industrial engineer and doing work on the space shuttle program.
Wow. So how did you end up there? I mean, it's not like you just leave school, you study, and all of a sudden you're working for NASA.
Yeah.
How did you get there? What are some of the steps?
I had a really great advisor at uni.
Yeah.
And he actually said to me, well, it wasn't him, it was my calculus professor, who my advisor had brought to the school to teach calculus. And he said to me, do you want a job? And you know, I was all of 19. I went, yes, I do want a job.
Wow.
And so I ended up at this big company, and I worked there for almost 7 or 8 years.
Wow.
In Southern California. Yeah.
And so this is a private business you're working for.
That's right.
But then that leads into working for NASA.
Well, because of the work I was doing, I was working on Space Shuttle in Southern California.
Right.
And NASA in Houston just had a big reorganization. And they had lots and lots of contracts, and they boiled it down to one.
Mm.
And the company that won was, weirdly, the same company my dad worked for.
Wow.
in Southern California. He worked at the same company for 40 years. Yeah. Okay. So when I came home and told him that I was going to work for the same company, you could just see this little spark of pride. Yes, my son's seen the light. He's doing
literally
the right thing.
Following in his footsteps.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
right.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and you've ended up, as I say, in NASA again. How did that come about, and what was your role there?
Yeah, well, because I was flying back and forth between L.A. and Houston, and because of this contract, I just was there on a business meeting, and I saw one of the guys that was doing the hiring, and I said, you know, I think I'd like to work, and he said, okay, and that was basically my interview.
Wow.
Yeah, and on the way home, I bought a house.
Sorry, you bought a house on the way home.
I bought a house on the way home because I could.
You were young. Well, you were young.
I was young.
You were no commitments at this stage.
I was being paid well. I was an engineer, and I just thought, yeah, I'll just buy a house.
Wow.
They were all a bit, yeah, it was pretty weird because they put me with the guy that had been there the least amount of time.
Okay.
He said, well, you go find him a house.
Wow.
And so they did. They found a house. I signed the preliminary papers. I got on the plane and flew back to L.A.
Goodness me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so your role at NASA?
I worked in what's called the payload office. Mm-hmm. And because I hadn't been there very long, I was in what's called the back room. So when people watch Mission Control on television, you just see this big room of people at consoles.
Yeah.
And every one of those positions has another set of positions
yeah.
in another room down the corridor.
Okay.
So that's where I was. I was payload systems, I think I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
So part of the back end of the engine room,
that's
so
right.
to speak. Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And now you were there at a very specific time.
Yes, yes.
So you'd been there a couple of weeks, is that right?
I'd been there all of 2 weeks.
And yep. there was a launch of a particular craft known
that's
as?
Right. Known as Challenger.
Challenger.
Yep.
And for those that don't know the story, look it up on YouTube or
yeah,
anywhere.
That's right. That's
you'll
right.
find some of the video footage. Yep. Just incredible.
Yep.
But tell us from your perspective what had happened.
So it's an interesting sequence of events because on the day before, they actually put the crew into the shuttle and they closed the door and they couldn't get the metal bar out of the door.
Wow.
And so they decided, we've missed the launch window. So they opened the door, brought the crew out, which included Krista McAuliffe, who was the teacher, going to be the teacher in space.
Yep.
And they said, okay, we'll do it again tomorrow. So we sort of, you know, goofed around and went back to our offices and went, okay, we'll fly tomorrow.
Mm.
And the next day comes and we're sitting, I'm there with a guy who's also been there about 2 weeks in the back room. And we're looking at the closed circuit television and we see these icicles hanging down from the launch tower thinking that doesn't look good, but you know, the experts say everything's fine. So we're going to fly today and we're going to fly with the teacher in space. And then of course, 76 seconds into the flight, there was a catastrophic failure. The, one of the solid rocket boosters, instead of the exhaust going straight down, some of it went sideways and, liquid oxygen, liquid hydrogen, they don't like heat being applied to them. So that's when Challenger exploded.
Now, obviously, at this point, everyone's just in shock.
Yeah.
Everyone is just dumbfounded.
That's right.
No idea how to respond.
Yeah.
What are your first thoughts?
To be honest, my first thought was this is going to be Apollo 1.
Because
Apollo 1 was back in the early days of the Apollo moon program. And they put the three astronauts in the Apollo capsule for a test, and they bolted the door shut because that was the plan. You don't just have a handle, you bolt it shut, and it was pure oxygen, and something happened and the crew burnt up inside the capsule. And I remembered that. I mean, I was a kid with Apollo 1. When the explosion happened, I thought this is going to be like Apollo 1 again, and it's going to be years before we fly. And in fact it was. They didn't fly the shuttle again until 1988, so that was 86 to 88.
Yeah. And your role at that point kind of took a bit of a shift.
Yes, yeah.
Because there were people that were just looking for something outside of their current surrounding circumstances. Yeah. What were they looking for and how did you step in?
Well, they didn't know what to look for. It's just the astronauts live in Houston. That's their home. Their families are there. Again, being really, really new, it was a lot of just listening to people. But I was new and green, and I didn't really know how to handle it either because you know, I was all of maybe 20, 26, 27.
Yeah.
Now,
you're calling
yes.
out of that.
That's what was happening.
And that's part of that, obviously.
Yeah.
And we discussed earlier how there was always that thought process, there's something more.
Yeah.
And that kind of led into that next phase of something more. Yeah. What was that like?
Well, I grew up in the church. I grew up in, and I have to say the name out loud, so.
That's okay.
It's a shout out to the Congregational Church of Christian Fellowship.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know them
yeah.
well.
Yeah, of course
no,
you
no,
do.
I don't.
Of course you do. And that's the church I grew up in, you know, as a kid and as a young adult. And they were I called them my church mothers, and they would look at me and they'd go, "You're going to be a minister." And I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm an engineer." Don't say things like that.
Yeah.
And they just smile. You know, they give you that dutiful black woman smile,
like,
I know what I'm talking about. It's like, okay, thanks. And of course, I moved to Houston, so moved away from that wonderful community. But at the explosion, you know, at the death of Challenger, that really was, it started to bring up a lot of things that I had been thinking about before, and questions like, why am I doing this? And am I making a contribution? And, you know, how can I serve? That was really the crux of it.
Yeah.
How can I serve? Because I knew that sitting there for 2 years doing simulations and twiddling my thumbs, this is not a good place to be. It's not a good place to be for me. I mean, I'm glad lots of other people stayed and stuck it out. I've got really good friends that are still in the program. But for me, that's when the call came from this little voice in the back of my head to right in front of my face saying, dummy, this is what you're going to do. And I was in a wonderful church community in a little town called LaPorte, Texas. And the minister there was absolutely brilliant, because I said to him, look, I think I've got a call. And he said, well, look, we're gonna work together on this. Mm. And he was. He was absolutely brilliant. Now I'm in Berkeley and studying. Yeah.
And then you end up in Perth through this meeting of this wonderful woman.
That's right.
In 1994, you've moved here.
Yeah.
And you started working as a chaplain.
A chaplain at Methodist Ladies College.
MLC. Wow. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
And then,
not knowing anything about chaplaincy. Because in the U.S., and the reason my wife and I met is because I was in my third year, but I'd already gotten an appointment as one of the assistants to the president of the United Church of Christ, the U.S. denomination.
Right.
And I was really training on my engineering background and planning and, you know, those sorts of skills. And they said, yeah, you move to Cleveland. Now, Cleveland, Ohio is nothing like Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Snow.
Yeah.
And lots of it. But I thought, this is, what an opportunity. What a, you know, the president of the church is asking me to move to this place. And so off I went, and then after we got married, Rosie came as well, and we lived in the snow. I mean, she's from here, so what does she know about snow either? yeah. So we were there for 3 or 4 years, and then it was like, okay, it's time to go.
Yep. So here you are. You're an MLC. You're ministering to young girls. It's a ladies' college,
from little all the way up to year 12.
That's right. And you stayed there for how long?
I was there for 3 years. Yeah. There for 3 years, and then I moved into the church office in the city.
In the city.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how did you end up at Floriate then?
Because the minister at the time, Jeff Lilburn, was on the MLC council.
Right.
And we got to know each other, and I knew that he was the minister at Floriate, and Floriate wasn't far from where we lived, and just became part of the congregation. But I was really part of the congregation, kind of, you know, the sit-back kind of guy, because I was a school chaplain. You know, I had
that
full-time
was your
work.
Ministry. That
That's
was
right.
Your, yeah.
That's right. And it wasn't until a couple of years later with another minister who said, you know, I really think you need to be more involved. He was lovely about it, but he said, you need to be more involved. And so little by little, I became an elder, and then I became the chair of the elders, and just became part of the leadership of the church while still being, while I was chaplain, then in the church office, then I was at St. Stephen's School as the head of religious studies there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And now you've landed at Wesley in the
and
city.
And now I have landed at Wesley.
This amazing historical location.
151 years old.
Goodness
the building.
Me.
190 years for the congregation.
Not as old as Fremantle yet.
Not as old as Fremantle.
Well, never will be, of course. But I guess without putting you on the spot, but pretty much what I'm going to do, what's your vision, what's your heart for the city of Perth and for the church in the city of Perth?
To be a place where people just know that we're there. You know, we've got incredible resources at United Church in the city, and that, of course, includes Trinity Church, Wesley, and Ross Memorial in West Perth.
Yeah.
And once we get over COVID, once that's gone past us, we'll be able to open the doors again, make the church available for people that just want to come in and be quiet. I mean, I think that was one of the great things that all three buildings were able to do, just be a safe, quiet place.
Yeah.
And you just leave people alone, let them be in their own thoughts.
Yeah.
I was saying to you that reading an article about cathedrals in the UK, and lots of what they represent is just a place in the central city, and of course that's where we are, in the central city, for people to just be.
Very important, isn't it? And you know, we shared earlier this difference between, you know, modern church buildings, traditional church buildings, and some of the really historical ones like Wesley.
Like Wesley.
And they all have their place. They're all very important.
That's right.
And you look at the history and the stories of what has happened in some of those old buildings, the transformations, the revivals, etc. It's so important that we keep that heritage alive and keep digging into these old wells. So it is just an honour to have you in here this morning to share some of that.
Well, it's a pleasure.
And look, we look forward to more stories to come. You know, maybe not as big as the NASA story, but certainly in the respect of lives being transformed through what you're doing in the city. So God bless you, Reverend. Thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Like, look, we appreciate everything you're doing, everything here at Sunshine.
It's fantastic. Yeah. We're all part of the big family.
That's exactly right.
Let's keep doing it. Let's keep serving and loving.
That's right.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
For more details on this and other programs, contact 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia, or visit the website 98five.com.